your face. Not without lying to you. Blaze swung down from his horse. Here's a question. We're what, 20 miles from the road? What kind of idiot would come that far for nothing? A very clever one. Dante slid into the shadows of second sight. Nether gleamed on the underside of leaves, winked from the gaps in the splay of broken rocks. Slowly, as a flower follows the sun, he scanned the cliffside, feeling its silent face. Southward, toward Blackcairn, at the edge of his vision, a deeper blackness rippled from the slaty rock.
What?
Blaze said.
You've got that look.
What look?
Like you just heard Lady Swellchest has been widowed.
Lyra turned from the cliffs.
Lady Swellchest?
Dante slung himself atop his horse and trotted south. The nether set into the cliff was rectangular, dark as moonshadow, the size of a doorway. He dismounted and walked up to the shadows. He let his focus fade. The rectangle of nether disappeared, replaced by solid stone. He reached for the cliff. His hand disappeared into the wall. Lyra gasped. Blaze laughed. Dante peered at the nether set into the cliff. The rectangle of false rock hung like a tapestry from 3 strands of shadows. He snipped them. 1, 2, 3, and the nether collapsed like a watery blanket, oozing into the clutter of real rocks below. Where it had hung, a narrow staircase gaped from the face of the cliff.
"I'll stay with the horses,"
Morn said. Blaze snorted.
"Bravely volunteered."
"I'm not going up those stairs. My shoulders will get stuck, along with all the rest of me. Then you'll have to cut off my arms, and I won't be able to do anything with the horses at all, except watch sadly as they flee into the wild."
"You're staying with the horses," Blaze said.
Dante didn't bother asking Lyra what she wanted to do. From his horse, he grabbed his sword and shitsack, which was not at all what the word suggested, but rather a highly portable bag of dry rations, extra water skin, flint and steel, bandages, and other small necessities, a bundle Blaze had named based on the word you'd yell while grabbing it up and running away, and made sure Morn still had his loom.
"Speak up if anything strange happens," Dante said to the Norrin. "We'll let you know when we're on our way back."
"And just how fast we're retreating," Blaze said.
The stairs were so narrow, Dante's heels stuck past their edges. On the second step, he threw out his hands, convinced he was falling, then leaned forward and started up. The staircase turned 90 degrees, leaving him encased in dazzling blackness. His breathing echoed from walls which sometimes brushed both of his shoulders at once. Tingly heat flowed from his stomach. It smelled musty, dusty. It was perversely warm and humid. He fumbled for his torch stone. White light spilled over the darkness. The stairs seemed to widen, to fall away from his shoulders. He could breathe.
"Lost already," Blaze said behind him. "I suggest trying up."
Dante grinned. His nausea faded. He continued up. The stairs switchbacked every 30 vertical feet, each flight identical to those before and after. Was he certain the Shroud of Nether had been nothing more than an illusion of rock? What if it housed a doorway into another world composed entirely of this stairway? What if he lifted his foot from the final step and found himself back on the first? A draft tickled his nose, wet and salty. He cornered another switchback and blinked against the faint light. He rubbed his thumb across the torchstone, extinguishing it. Blaze yelped, then emerged into the diffuse sunlight, swords in hands. Around another turn, Dante faced a rectangle of gray light. He edged forward, shielding his eyes with the blade of his hand. He emerged from a massive black boulder into a high, misty plain. Streamers of fog coursed between irregular pillars of black stone. Moss and short green shoots clung to the ledges and faults. Water trickled down the weathered pillars, pooling in algal puddles. A frog sprung from Dante's path.
"We didn't just die, did we?" Blaise said. "This is how I always pictured the fields of Aron."
Dante shook his head. "The fields of Aron have no sun, only starlight."
"Remind me to die in another country," Lyra said.
Somewhere above the mist, the sun hung in the west, reorienting Dante after the twisting passage up the steps. He headed the direction of the murky sun, keeping the nether close. Water dripped ceaselessly. Thumb-sized black birds flitted through the mist-scoured boulders. As Dante passed beneath a lintel of shrubs strung between two pillars, a centipede as long as his arm unspooled from its waxy leaves. He dropped back with a strangled gasp. Blaise whacked it in half, leaving one end metronoming from the high shrubs, while the other half smacked the ground and wriggled sinuously. Blaise wiped off his sword.
"Maybe it's never been conquered because nobody wants the damn place."
"Remind me to never close my eyes again," Dante said.
Lyra considered around the writhing carcass.
"When I signed on to protect you, I didn't imagine it would lead me to realms like this."
"Turn back whenever you want," Dante shrugged.
With a thick crunch, she stepped on the centipede's head.
"Did I say I was scared?"
The going was hampered by puddles and slick rock and sudden bogs of mud. After an hour's travel, they might have made 3 miles. The flat highlands slanted down into slick soil loosely bound by flatulent-smelling clumps of kelpish plants. Dante's boots pulled and squelched. Despite the chill, a thin, clammy sweat glued his shirt to his back. 100 feet downhill, more boulders loomed in the mist. The shadows flickered. Mud slurped beneath Dante's foot. He stopped dead.
"Run!"
He charged downhill, muck yanking at his feet. Blaise and Lyra smacked along behind him. The ground quivered, rumbling. Uphill, a shelf of mud dislodged like a god slurping a crater of pudding. At first it flowed slower than their heavy, slogging steps, but soon gathered speed, a semi-solid tumble of mud and vines and death. Dante stumbled, pitching forward, clawing at the mud while his momentum carried him forward. Somehow he found his feet. The slope flattened. Pillars poked through the muck, misty and mossy. He dodged through the first line. A 30-foot-high blade of rock stuck from the ground. He leapt against its face, palms tearing as he pulled himself up the slippery stone, muddy boots kicking for purchase. 10 feet up, he rolled onto a broad ledge and reached down to pull Blaise up. Together they hauled Lyra up behind them. With a deafening gurgle, the wave of mud hit the flats. Sludge poured between the boulders. Dante forced himself higher, nails scraping through the cushy moss. A stench of cold, damp rot engulfed him. He reached the crest of the ridge and flopped on his side, panting, feet dangling from the other side. Blaise and Lyra followed, soaked and muddy. Mud burbled among the boulders, swallowing some whole. Stones ground and groaned. Dante wiped his hands on a patch of fuzzy green lichen.
"Gashins, bursting hemorrhoids," Blaise said. "Got out of there just in time, didn't we?"
"Too soon for the liking of some," Dante said.
"Like who, the centipedes?"
Dante stood, wincing at the pain in his elbows and knees. The spar of rock was nearly 4 feet wide, but in the breeze-blown mist he felt like he could fall at any moment. He cupped his hands to his mouth.
"I know you're there!"
His shout died in the silent gray world. Blaise sighed.
"What do you think a centipede's voice sounds like, anyway? I'm thinking a raccoon choking on a rattlesnake's tail." "Come out!" Dante hollered.
before I make you find out what's at the bottom of this mud."
Water trickled down the stones. On a rise of rock 40 feet away, a woman materialized in the mist.
"Holy shit," Blaze said.
She gazed at them, motionless, dark hair framing her face. She smiled, raised one hand, her wrist wrapped in red, and waved.
"Goodbye."
Black, moth-like force gathered in her hands. Dante's eyes went wide. He drew on the shadows, too, feeding them with the blood welling from his scraped hands. The woman tipped back her head, pausing her work. Beside him, Lyra held out both hands, palm down, and rolled them at the wrist until her palms faced the sky.
Worlds within worlds.
The nether flowed away from the woman's hands.
"What are you doing here?"
"We came to..."
Dante snapped his mouth shut. In a rush, he understood.
"We came to discover why Pocket Cove has never been invaded, but I suppose we can leave now."
The woman's red wrap fluttered around her wrist.
"Do you find our world hostile?"
"Yes, and I've just figured out how you keep it that way."
"Unfortunate," she said. "Now that you know, you cannot leave."
"That's downright uncivilized," Blaze called across the gap. "I feel so unwelcome, I think I might just turn around and go home."
"Please, come with me. What happens next is not for me to decide."
Blaze dropped his voice. "Ultimately, we kill her and run away before her friends come out to find what happened." Lyra gave him a dark look.
"The people don't kill as indiscriminately as you. We should go with her."
Dante stared through the mist. It would be easy enough to turn back. The woman's hold on the nether was strong, but not strong enough to save her from what he could command. Still, though he knew how they protected their land, it wasn't the type of knowledge that would allow him to use their methods himself. He needed to know more.
"We'll come with you as friends," he said. "The kind of friends who don't try to kill each other."
The woman nodded and climbed off the edge of her ridge. Dante followed suit. The descent was much trickier than his terror-aided climb up, and he nearly slipped 3 times, banging his knee hard enough to draw blood. At the bottom, he lowered himself to the thick layer of mud. His boots sunk to the ankles, but he could walk. The woman introduced herself as Asher and squelched west across the mud. Dante followed her absently, lost in his second sight, keen for any telltale glimmers of nether around her hands. Hard stone once again thumped beneath his boots.
"When have you met our people?"
Asher asked Lyra sometime later.
"Who taught you that sign?"
Lyra didn't take her eyes from the misty horizon.
"I grew up in the Carlin Islands. When I was old enough, I began hiring on ships as a swordsman. That lasted a few years. My final assignment was with the Shadow. It did a lot of business with your people."
"I know of the Shadow," Asher said. "I saw it just last fall."
"Good to know it survives. My last voyage with it was 3 years ago. It was the summer. We were meeting one of your vessels at Harl Island to buy all the barn whelks it could carry."
"Barn whelks?" Blaze said.
Lyra nodded.
"Snails."
"Snails?
When fresh or properly dried, they can be used to treat the venom of most other creatures of the sea,"
Asher said.
"In most parts of your country, a handful of barn whelks will buy you a household."
"New idea," Blaze said. "We forget all this slave business and become snail hunters instead."
"This is enough about snails," Asher said. "You were saying?"
Lyra stepped around a knee-high swell of slick black rock.
"We were on the piers, finishing the exchange, when the pirates struck. The Eye Teeth gang.
We were outnumbered, grossly. Those of us with blades went to the docks to hold them off, while the Shadow and the people of the pocket shoved off. We managed to hold them off just long enough. Most of my fellows fell. I tried to fight to the death, but the eye teeth took me instead. They wanted to know where the Shadow had gone, as well as the vessel of the people of the pocket. I didn't tell them.
Ash's expression darkened. What did it cost you?
Lyra pulled back her lips and pointed at the gaps where her eye teeth had been.
Dante looked away. He'd assumed they'd been lost to simple rot.
Those, she said, as well as two of my toes, and all my toenails.
But you didn't speak.
Lyra shook her head.
I was sworn to protect the Shadow.
Asher cocked her head.
But not the people they did business with.
Revealing the people of the pocket's destination could have compromised the Shadow's location. In any event, it would have compromised the Shadow's interests and would have been a violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of my vow. After a few days, the eye teeth knew my cause was lost. They ready to kill me. But a few days was all the time the people of the pocket needed to return. The eye teeth had taken several of their crew as well. The people's nethermancers wiped them out. They would have killed me too for what I had seen, but a woman named Istvel had seen me keep my tongue throughout it all. She gave her name for me. I was saved.
Asher held her hands out, palm down, and rolled her wrist until her palms pointed at the fog-matted skies.
And she showed you worlds within worlds.
She showed me worlds within worlds.
Lyra nodded.
That is why you're here with me, and not back there beneath 100 feet of mud.
I don't think that's the only reason, Dante muttered.
Asher smiled as coldly as the mist. For the next 2 hours, they walked in silence through the sweating stones. The sun waned, its fog-blocked glare drifting toward the horizon. The mist thinned abruptly. They stood on black cliffs above light blue seas, rhythmic waves hissing over a beach of black sand. Asher crossed to a doorway carved into the side of a rocky mound. White light blossomed in her hand. She led them down another long, enclosed stairwell, emerging from the bottom into the pink rays of sunset. Lyra took a long breath of salty air through her nose.
Have outsiders ever seen this?
Sometimes. Asher walked south across the stand.
Then they are given the choice to stop being outsiders, or stop being alive.
To the north, a spectral call of oot, oot, oot floated down the shore. Asher's feet whispered on the sand. Down the beach, a proper door opened into the cliffside. Asher opened it, revealing a high tunnel lit with the unblinking white glare of torch stones. Their feet echoed in the closed space. Laughter rang down the halls. Asher turned down 2 side passages, stopping in front of a door made from something papery and semi-translucent.
Please don't leave this spot.
She opened the door, revealing mounds of blankets and white light, then closed it with a whisper. Low voices seeped through the thin door. She returned a minute later and gestured them inside. On the far side of the stone room, a woman sat on a pile of blankets, her black hair shot through with grey. She wore snug, featureless black clothes and a red scarf on her wrist, which fluttered as she gestured to the blanket across from her. Dante sat, trying not to gape. Nether rolled from her like heat from a stove. She did nothing with it. In fact, she didn't even appear to have summoned it. But he could feel it nonetheless. A dark ocean he'd never felt from anyone besides Callie himself.
Please, tell me what you know,
she said. Please don't try to lie.
Dante forced himself to meet her eyes. All I have are guesses.
Then kindly tell me what you guess.
The cliffs keep most out. I don't know whether you shaped them or simply found them useful. When armies came, you buried the soldiers in mud or sand until they stopped coming at all. If even that doesn't work, you seal off your caves and leave the invaders to wonder where you've gone.
She gave them a look as sturdy as the walls, as stony, too. Where are you from?
Narashtivik.
Is Narashtivik still a possession of Garsk?
He risked a short laugh. Not for long, though our independence might be as short-lived as a dayfly. The king will march on us soon. I came here to learn how you've resisted every army that's come your way, in the hopes we might do the same.
She nodded, gazing toward the ceiling. I see. Every people should rule themselves, if ruling themselves is what they want to do.
Dante leaned forward. Then you'll teach me how to move the earth?
Of course not, she laughed. I'm afraid we don't give a shit. Why do you think we're behind these great black walls?
Dante blinked. But we have a common enemy. If you help us, you help yourself. Her brows lifted as slowly as a sunrise.
They're not my enemies. Enemies can only be enemies if they have the ability to hurt you.
I'll swear on anything never to tell, never to use it against you. Why are you the only ones with the right to defend yourselves?
We don't. But we are the only ones with the right to our secrets, if you please.
She leaned back, folding her hands in her lap so her fingers overlapped at a right angle. Helpless fury rose in Dante's throat. He wanted to shake her until the knowledge popped right out her throat. What she knew could change the world, could forge him into a weapon every bit as strong as the quivering bow. To deny him that felt not just heartless, but monstrous. This isn't just for my sake. He fought to control his voice. This is for the entire Norrin people. King Modigan will cross their lands before he gets to us, and he doesn't consider them human.
I sympathize. That's why I'm letting you leave, which I urge you to please do now.
She shut her eyes. Asher detached from the wall.
I will take you back to your land, please.
It's time for us to go, Lyra said softly.
Dante wanted to scream. Instead, he stood. Asher took a torch stone on her way out. It lit their way across the twilight beach, up the stairs, and across the miles of misty plateau. They crossed the last hour under full cover of night, their path through the rocks and mud lit only by an unseen moon and the lunarly glow of the torchstone. Dante stayed silent all the way to the staircase, back down to the plains. Asher halted there, atop the carpet of broken rocks.
Please don't come back.
But you've been so helpful, Dante said. Worlds within worlds, Lyra waved. Asher nodded.
Worlds within worlds.
She disappeared up the staircase. Morn's fire flickered in the grass. Dante didn't speak on the way there. As Morn rose to greet them, a crackling, banging rumble rolled from the cliffs. Dante whirled. Rocks and dust sprayed from the black wall. The remains of the staircase crumbled to the plains in a pile of rough shards.
Chapter 13 The plains rolled away, the same empty miles they'd crossed just days before.
Dante let Blaze and Lyra fill Morn in on what had happened in the pocket. He pushed his horse until it sweated and heaved. The return to Wending and the Lakes of Galador was their last chance to stave off the coming strife. He resolved not to fail. A day's ride from the western peaks of the rift, he pulsed Kali's loon. The old man answered at once. Dante related the details of their trip to the cove, expecting Kali to respond with derision and complaints, but he turned thoughtful instead.
"So, they make the lands do their dirty work for them,"
Kali mused.
"Wish I'd thought of that one."
"Can you move the earth?"
"If I kick it hard enough."
Dante sighed. "Do you have any idea how it's done?"
"Oh, I have ideas," Kali said. "You could plant a rock beneath a stick holding up a giant vat of mud, and then use the nether to crack the rock. But it sounds like the people of the pocket are a smidge more sophisticated than that."
"I get the feeling they could carve a statue for you without lifting a finger."
"Interesting that you put it in those terms. For the most part, we think of the nether as a brute force, a thing that roughly grabs or bludgeons, an extension of our arm, perhaps.
If our arms were made of large hammers.
Yet they seem to have precise command of the ground. Are they using finer tools? Or are they employing a different approach altogether?
Maybe they're literally convincing the earth to move."
"I know this much," Dante said. "They're skilled. Highly. I'd love to see a fight between their leader and you."
"I don't get in fights. I've far too much dignity for that."
Kali coughed up something wet and substantial.
"Speaking of squabbles, the Noran haven't been quick to leap into one. None of their clans, towns, or individuals of interest have officially defied the treaty."
"Oh? And how many of them have officially fied it?"
"Few," he admitted.
"Still, it's reason for hope, if hope is something you find useful."
It was, as much as Dante might like to deny it. The following morning, he took to the road with something like a smile. White caps rested on the green mountains. A light haze softened the world, muting the early morning light. His horse stepped lightly. They climbed into the pass where a forest of bamboo sliced the sunlight into a thousand yellow wedges. The snows had retreated to isolated patches of blue-white shade, leaving the ground sodden and soft. The haze burned away by the time they crested the pass. Below, the Lake of Galador glittered like the land's most precious gem. A warm spring wind followed them into Wending. They stabled beside the docks and rode to Lolligan's. The old man answered the door himself. He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes.
"And how are the people of the pocket?" he said. "Do their eyes really glow red? Is the lightning that shoots from their ass lethal, or just part of the show?"
"They're creepy," Blaze said. "If the rest of the world dropped dead, their only complaint would be the stink."
"Wait, you actually met them?"
Dante rolled his eyes, and gained nothing from it. "What about here? Has anyone's mind budged an inch?"
Lolligan's tanned brow wrinkled.
"Been a lot of talk, even by the standards of people who do nothing but talk."
"Good talk."
"Not by your standards."
Lolligan glanced from his doorway, as if expecting to spot men in black masks lurking in the bushes.
"I get the idea the association isn't as unified as Jacobs wants you to think."
Dante locked eyes with the mustached man. "What gives you that idea?"
"The King's Treaty proved that if they want to move against it, they need to do it now. Yet they haven't. I think there are some warhawks in the Tagvog, and their strategy is to do nothing but stall until there's nothing that can be done."
"Then we'll have to force the issue," Dante said. "Do you have any paper?
I think it's time to send Jacobs a letter.
Blaze gasped.
Are you sure you want to be that bold? What will people say?
Inside, Dante penned a brief letter in his finest hand, blotted the ink, and sealed it with a dab of black wax. Lolligan's boatman rolled away to Jacob's Isle. He returned in less than an hour with a letter of his own, an invitation to another dinner 2 days later.
Dante sent out his clothes to be washed, went into town for a haircut and shave, had his boots resoled and relaced. He spent the remaining time hanging around tea houses in the fancier districts, trolling for gossip and insight. The former was torrential, the latter a dribble. One rumor stated that Jacobs would marry his first daughter and the fortune that came with her to Modigan's second son, if only the king revoked the treaty in favor of peace. Simultaneously, another claimed Jacobs would raise the army himself if Modigan didn't lead his country to battle. Others claimed Modigan was coming to town in person to rally support for his cause. The one thing they all agreed on was that the future looked uncertain, and that uncertainty was bad for anyone currently doing well. The night and morning before the dinner, Dante sequestered himself in his room at Lolligan's, drafting speeches to hit this point home. By definition, every one of the merchants at the event would be a successful man or woman. A few of them might secretly hope to benefit from the upheaval. Most, however, would suffer. A few might lose it all. Wars were costly things. If Modigan's silver started to dwindle, no one knew who he might turn to for aid, and what threats he'd make to ensure he got it. Dante finished with hours to spare. He spent them bathing away the salt and grime of the trail. At the pier, he was surprised to see Blaze had done the same. Their boat pushed off, Jacobs bound. At the chairman's island, rowboats and sailboats clustered around the docks, which creaked with men and women in bright skirts and fur coats. They milled into the banquet hall, where servants stood ready with platters and crystal glasses. Jacob's avuncular laughter rolled across the room. Dante could barely see him behind the swarm of men and women vying for his word. Dante slid along the picture windows, maneuvering closer, accepting a servant's offer of wine and a pastry smeared with farmer's cheese and baked trout. He recognized many of the men and women from the prior event, and he smiled and chatted with them while he waited for a break in Jacob's admirers. The room smelled of tea and wood smoke and charred pepper pike. Dante caught his break an hour later. Beside Jacob's, a merchant's young wife tipped back her head, laughing without reserve, her cleavage soaring. Heads turned. Dante wedged himself next to Jacobs, whose wing-like eyebrows were raised in amusement. Seeing Dante, he smiled warmly.
"I'm glad to see you made it back from the West with no loss of limbs or sanity."
Dante smiled back. There was nothing there but grass and cliffs. The only risk was being winded to death.
"Ah, is it windy there? It's been unseasonably warm here. Good seasons ahead, I think."
Jacobs scuffed his feet left, right, left, smiling apologetically at his own superstition. "And how did the time treat Galador? Does this dinner mean you've reached a decision?"
Jacobs turned to the window, smiling at some distant peak.
"After we eat, good man, we wouldn't want to put anyone off their meal."
Dante found himself subtly replaced by a whip-thin man with a triangular moustache and a hungry eye. He let himself be pried away, and was soon engaged by a man he'd met at the last quorum, the youngish one with the widow's peak and knowing smile, who reintroduced himself as Ewell.
"Ever figure out the cost?"
Ewell said. Dante cocked his head.
"The cost?" "Of striking this bargain."
"Besides precious days of my life?" Dante gazed at the burbling crowd. "I think they're still figuring the price out for themselves."
"How strange.
Yul said. You don't tease the hungry fish. You just drop your hook.
Have you heard...
Dante's breath left him in a groaning whoosh as Blaze drove his elbow into his side. In the same instant, the crowd went silent as a fog. Several glanced Dante's way with looks as if he'd farted in their soup.
We're ruined, Blaze hissed. They've played us from the start.
Dante rubbed his ribs.
What are you yammering about?
Stand up on those delicate little toes of yours and look.
All the room's attention had turned to a door in the far wall. Dante craned his neck, but couldn't see past the well-fed wall of traders. He shuffled to one side until he found a gap in the quiet crowd. Across the room, a young man with a striking jaw and severely cropped blonde hair strolled up to a smiling Jacobs. As if sensing Dante's gaze, Cassander turned, met his eyes, and smiled. Fear and fury fought for Dante's heart. Jacobs cleared his throat in a way that was somehow humble yet piercing. The mounting murmur stopped cold.
Today, we are graced by a man whose name speaks itself, Jacob said. We are happy to have him. Honored, too. I introduced Lord Cassander of Beckenridge.
Cassander smiled thinly at the floor. I'm happy to be here. It means good things to know I'm welcome. I thought that might not be so.
He paused, still smiling. Someone coughed. A glass clinked. Cassander went on as if there'd been no stop at all.
Turmoil is frightening. I wouldn't have blamed you for questioning the king, but wealth depends on labor. Labor depends on loyalty. You prune an unruly hedge for its own health. This takes work, sweat, blood, if there are thorns. But when you are done, the hedge grows back. It takes the shape you have imposed on it.
He looked up, smile stretched to the breaking point.
I am glad to garden together.
Light applause accompanied the nodding heads of the crowd. Dante bowled his way forward, shouldering tea lords and their stately wives until he stood face to face with Jacobs. The merchant buried his smile and nodded discreetly to the door. Dante followed him out to his enclosed deck. Sunlight bounced from the lake, shimmering on the walls. The room was warm and smelled of drying mussels.
I'm sorry, Jacob said simply. Things happen very fast.
Things, Dante said. Is that how you pronounce betrayal in Wending?
Jacobs gazed down on Dante from beneath the lintels of his brows.
This isn't personal. This is a matter of pragmatism.
It's going to be pretty God's damned personal to all the Norren who die.
Do you think we gave that no thought? We gleaned the palace and tended to enforce the king's will through any means necessary. We used what leverage we could to convince them to take the targeted approach. A barber's knife instead of a farmer's scythe.
Dante closed his eyes. His head hummed.
Everything could have been different.
Jacobs laid a warm hand on his shoulder.
I'm truly sorry. We're all doing what we can.
Dante pulled away and headed through the muffled hallway to get Blaze. The banquet hall was a screeching riot of laughter and wheedling and clawing hands. He struggled through the hot crush of people and found Blaze watching the room from one of the walls. He grabbed Blaze's sleeve.
We're leaving. Sure you don't want to leave our noble friend with a tap to the jaw?
You never know, he might like it.
Only if we follow it up with a stab to the neck. Hello,
Cassander said behind them. Dante spun. The lord smiled his thin smile.
You've changed shape since I saw you. Weren't you a Malish merchant before?
We upgraded, Blaze said.
How's the home?
Rebuilding quickly. Norin backs are strong. Untiring.
Dante jerked his chin to the milling merchants.
How long have you been involved in this?
Cassander gave him a glassy look.
Since always. Money makes men forget themselves. My place is to remind them of theirs.
Dante leaned in until their faces were inches apart. Cassander's breath smelled of mint and wine.
Funny. I sometimes remind people it is everyone's place to die.
The man laughed softly.
I could have you arrested right now.
Go for it, Blaze said. If I'm going to the Irons, I might as well kill you now and get my money's worth.
Not while there's better to come, Cassander said. I believe in choice. I believe you will choose foolishly. I will laugh when you're hanged.
Dante turned away before his clenching hands found the man's throat. As he knifed through the throng, he found a note in his hand,
as if it had always been there.
He glanced from side to side. Men laughed in each other's faces. Blaze shoved his back, propelling him forward. Dante clutched the note and stuffed his hand into his pocket. Blaze didn't stop pushing him until they dropped down the front steps on their way to the docks.
Dante scowled against the afternoon sunlight.
Will you quit shoving me already?
You have that
other look. The one where happy people are about to become sad little cinders.
Dante had too much to say, so he unfolded the note instead. It was short as an oracle, composed of blocky capitals. Coburn Inn, rooftop, midnight. He handed it to Blaze, who, a few short years ago, couldn't even read his native Malish, but had picked up the Gascon script as soon as he bothered to try.
Someone gave me this on the way out, Dante said.
Blaze smoothed the paper against his palm. Well, we're doing this.
What if it's a trap?
Then we reprimand whoever's trying to trap us.
Dante glanced at the boatmen patrolling the dock with buckets and mops.
It's just like Lolligan said. They were stringing us along while playing the capital on the other end. Very rude. Rudeness that should be punished.
We'll see what our mysterious messenger has to say tonight. Beyond that, it may be time to head home.
Blaze grinned ruefully. This trip didn't go too well, did it?
We got the Norn some food. No one can speak ill of food. Unless it's pickled.
They returned to Lolligan's. Dante gave a brief account to the others.
Morn's face darkened behind his beard.
Lyra nodded stoically. Fan looked crestfallen.
These men speak too much, don't they? I'm beginning to believe a man only talks at length when he doesn't want to know what he really thinks.
I had a bad feeling the last few days, Lolligan said. I'm sorry it came to this.
Dante's anger had left him too hollowed out to do anything besides take a nap. Blaze left to scout out the Coburn Inn. Dante woke in darkness, as refreshed as if he'd had a good long cry. The servants had saved him some supper, whitefish and bamboo shoots, in a thick gravy of mashed onions and chilies. The spice drove the last of his sleepiness away.
Pretty typical inn, Blaze reported. Places to drink and places to sleep.
How far?
30-minute walk from the landing. Figured we'd put Morn and a bow on a roof across the street, Lyra in the alley below. You know how I like to be able to run if things turn nasty.
Dante nodded, wiping his spice-dripping nose.
How's the neighborhood?
Horrible.
Would that be the word? I wouldn't be surprised if the mattresses were stuffed with corpses.
That's not very practical. You'd have to change them out every month at least.
Blaze brushed crumbs from the table.
I think you're overestimating the quality of the service in this inn.
They borrowed plain, dark clothing from Lolligan's servants and left a minute after 11. The city docks were quiet, gentle waves lapping over the pebbles. Blaze led them uphill through whitewashed row houses and tidily clipped parks. Soon the walls turned unpainted, weather-chapped. The green lawns disappeared in favor of raked stone and individual trees. A three-quarter moon lit snaking alleys and haphazard homes attached to and built on top of much older stone structures. The few windows that weren't shuttered were glassless holes opening on dim rooms. On the corners, men sat on chairs, exposed to the wind, swigging from leather flasks. A whole crew of sailors reeled past, singing a rhythmic song that was either about oars or penises. Torches fluttered from the more ambitious inns and pubs, otherwise the streets were dark as a closet. The Coban Inn's only identification was two sticks of bamboo crossed above its crooked doorway. Like everything in the neighborhood, it was wedged between two other unornamented structures, but it stood a floor taller than anything within several blocks.
"Not sure how much use Morn's going to be as a sniper when he can't cover the roof," Dante said.
Blaze shrugged. "We'll stand on our tiptoes. See if we can't convince whoever we're meeting to do the same." He led them across the street to the kinking alley behind the buildings that faced the Coban. Wash lines webbed the space between the upper floors. Ramshackle decks jutted below shuttered windows. Pots clogged these platforms, sporting yellow sticks of withered plants. The walls were winter-warped wood, poorly chinked.
"Think you can make it up?" Dante said.
Morn tipped back his shaggy head. "There's a chance I do, and a chance I don't."
Blaze stared at him. "Is there even a point to saying things like that?"
"You don't think it's important to remember that everything's uncertain?"
"When I'm climbing a roof, I want to be convinced there's zero chance my brains will wind up slopped all over the street."
"Well, to each his own," Morn said. "I will do my best. If I don't make it, I'll yell. Involuntarily, I suspect."
This was good enough for Dante. He watched the rooftops as they moved to the alleys behind the Coban, which were more or less the same as the back streets they left Morn in, except they smelled somewhat worse of urine. Recessed doorways stood in the faces of nearly every building, as if the passage had been specifically designed to hide armed lookouts. Lyra chose one halfway down the alley and disappeared into its shadows. "I can't imitate a bird call to save my life," she said. "Or your life, for that matter, so if there's trouble, I'll yell too."
"Works for me."
Blaze stepped toward the inn's back door, then glanced back over his shoulder. "And thanks." Her teeth flashed in the darkness. Blaze tried the door, which opened with a squeak and a shudder. The public room was smoky, the product of a chimney that hadn't been swabbed in ages. A group of men rattled dice at a table. The walls were scrawled with carved initials and symbols, mostly animals and body parts. Dante rented the last available room on the top floor and clumped to the stairs. His room was tight-walled and all too redolent of the alley's stink. He locked the door behind them and swung open the shutters. Blaze poked his head out the glassless window and gaped upwards. "These are the stupidest roofs I've ever seen." Dante leaned out the window. Above, the eaves flared away from the roof's edge. "Maybe they were built to discourage people from walking on roofs. No one has ever walked on a roof for a socially acceptable reason."
"We're not committing a crime here."
"Yes, but if we're meeting at midnight on a roof in the shitty part of town, chances are we'll be conspiring to do so."
"Right now, I'm more interested in conspiring not to break my leg."
Blaze pulled inside and knelt to paw through his pack, emerging with a steel hook and a line of rope as thin as his finger. He lobbed the hook up at the roof, hanging on to the rope's loose end. The hook screeched over the clay and fell down, banging against the shutters below them. Blaze swore, then repeated this exact sequence a half dozen times, while Dante gritted his teeth and listened for the angry thump of the innkeeper's boots on the stairs. Finally, the hook secured with a clink. Blaze yanked to make sure it was secure, then knotted the loose end around the shutter's lower hinges. As casually as if he were hopping off a step, he swung into the open air and scrambled up the rope. Dante gaped up after him.
"Come on, you sissy!" Blaze stage-whispered from the roof. "What's the worst that could happen?"
"Dying. Only if you have overcooked noodle arms." Dante reached for the rope. I wonder what's killed more men over the years, wild animals or masculine taunts. It looked worse than it was. Though he lacked Blaze's natural athleticism, years of travel and sporadic sword practice had left him honed and lean. He pulled himself up, hand over hand. When his elbow cleared the eave's lip, Blaze grabbed his sleeve and hauled him in. There, the upturned edges of the roof proved beneficial, giving them something to bang into and grab hold of if they were to slip on the dew-slick tiles. Blaze leaned forward and headed up the steep roof on all fours. On the other side of its peak, the roof plateaued in a shelf some 3 feet wide. Blaze slid down to it, and Dante followed, seating himself. The flat stone street waited 60 feet below. The midnight bells tolled while he caught his breath. He squinted at the roofs across the street, but it was too dark to see if Morn had made it to the top. The bells rang a final time, were overtaken by silence. Blocks away, a man cackled and whooped, his voice bouncing down the street. "Think Cassander's pranking us?" Blaze said. "I don't think he has the imagination."
"Right?"
Blaze laughed. "He talks like a dead person trying to remember how it felt to be alive." A voice murmured behind them.
"He's more dangerous than you think."
Dante whirled, tipping. He flung out a palm and caught at the roof. A figure crouched just behind the roof's peak, dressed from head to toe in midnight blue. Eyes peeked from two diamond-shaped cuts.
"My gods," Blaze said. "Have we been ambushed by a towel?"
The fabric over the figure's mouth puffed with a single laugh. The laugh was a woman's.
"This is no ambush."
"That's good, because we've prepared an elaborate counter-ambush that would wreak terrible harm on any real ambushers."
She shook her head.
"This is a proposal."
"But we just met."
Dante almost shoved Blaze off the roof. "Propose away." The woman slipped over the peak of the roof, joining them on the narrow shelf.
"Do you know what happened at Jacob's today?"
"Sure," Blaze said. "We got royally screwed."
"Jacob's represented the view of a slender minority," the woman said.
"Then what does the fat majority say?" Dante said. Behind her cloth mask, the woman's look was unreadable.
"That he struck a deal. One that will benefit him and those with him at the top. Everyone below will have to scramble to avoid the coming flood."
Dante shifted his weight across the wet tiles.
"Then, what are you willing to risk to divert the flood altogether?"
"That depends on what you're willing to risk to help us."
"Easy answer. We've already risked everything."
"Support for the capital hinges entirely on Jacob's ability to whip the others in line."
Her eyes were as grey as a winter sea, and steady as the streets 60 feet below.
"But no one likes the lash. Jacob's doesn't look out for our interests any more than he manages yours. He used you, leveraged your presence to get Setevan's financiers to give him everything he asked. I'm sure the terms were fat, too. But he favors his friends. When a road charges a new toll, he doesn't pay.
the taxes on whatever blend of leaves he happens to be growing never rise. Whatever deal he's struck with Modigan and Cassander, most of us will never see it. Our words and our votes don't matter. As long as he's in charge, they never will.
Is this going where I think it's going? Blay said. What's the solution? Dante said.
Very simple, the woman said. If you want the merchant's backing, all you have to do is kill Jacob's dead.
Chapter 14. A cold wind flowed over the roof. Dante rubbed his mouth.
Why don't you kill him yourselves?
The woman's mask shifted in a smile.
So you'll be blamed.
Blaze laughed.
Well, that's honest. Who do you work for? Dante said.
Change, she said. That's all you need to know.
Blaze sniffled against the cold.
Generally, I prefer to do a little thinking before committing an assassination. How can we reach you?
Hang a flag from Lolligan's roof. White for no, black for yes. Our offer expires at this time tomorrow.
We'll let you know, Dante said.
She nodded and vaulted over the roof's peak, disappearing with a single clink of tiles.
Dante climbed up the roof, slid down to where their hook still clung to the eaves, and shimmied down to the open window.
Half an hour had passed since they'd taken their room.
On their way out into the alley, the innkeeper gave them a funny look.
Lyra's silhouette emerged from a doorway.
Someone vaulted across the rooftops a few minutes after you climbed up. They left the same way then, 5 minutes later.
Sounds right, Dante said.
He cut across the main street and back into the alley where they'd left Morn.
So, what happened?
Lyra said.
Bad things, Blaze said.
But you look fine.
Oh, not for us.
All this coyness is getting old.
There was a sharpness to her voice Dante hadn't heard before.
The less you let me know, the less I can help you take your goals.
You'll hear it when we explain to Morn and Lolligan.
Dante cupped his hands and hissed up at the dark walls of the alley.
Morn. I exist, Morn replied faintly.
A foot scuffed high above their heads. Morn lowered himself from a high balcony, stretching his toes to meet the deck, a story below, clinging to a clothesline for support. He reached the ground, nodded to himself, and joined them without a single question. Dante headed toward the docks, staring down every man who glanced his way, looking over his shoulder at every scrape of foreign feet. At the island manor, Lolligan opened the front door himself, too bright-eyed to have slept. He sent a servant for tea and bread and fish spread.
The later the meeting, the more interesting it tends to be, eh?
The tradesman smiled, beard ruffling.
Now, spill it before I drop dead of anticipation.
For a moment, Dante considered lying, or claiming it was too sensitive a matter to discuss. He'd only met Lolligan a couple weeks ago, and there had always been an eagerness to the old man that suggested he was pursuing submerged angles of his own. But right now, he had no choice. He needed Lolligan's knowledge. He had to trust him. The story didn't take long to tell. By the end, a strange smile had worked its way across Lolligan's face.
"This is funny to you," Dante finished.
Lolligan's eyebrows jumped.
"In a way that's wry and sad. Over the years, there's been more than one attempt to dislodge Jacobs from his perch atop the Swapole. Nothing ever changed. It's like corking up a tea kettle. And now the pot has burst."
"So this is real? They actually want Jacobs dead?"
"I'm positive all kinds of people want that old son of a bitch dead. I wouldn't be at all surprised if someone were finally willing to do something drastic. I'll ask around tomorrow."
Lyra's mouth had been half open all the while.
She glanced around the padded benches where they sat.
Are you seriously considering this?
Murdering him?
I don't think we have another option, Dante said.
Yes, you do.